You're listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. 0% financing for 84 months right now on the 2017 Chevrolet Silverado, plus up to 10 grand in price reduction. This may be the best deal on Silverados ever. Check it out, Lakewood Chev.
As we do every single Tuesday, joined in studio by Bud Steen, former CFL official, current evaluator of officials. Mr. Steen, welcome in studio. Thanks for hanging out with me. We'll talk some CFL first.
Sure.
But last night, a star went down in the NFL, Odell Beckham. I just hit. I'm sure you've seen lots of hits like that in your career as an official. What'd you make of that? I believe you said legal but dirty.
Yeah. Obviously, when you're targeting an exposed skilled player, as occurred on that particular play, at the knee, you're seeking to remove him from the play, the quarter, the game, whatever. My analysis of that play was legal but dirty.
And we've seen hits similar like this in the CFL. I believe it was against Ottawa. Mike Riley kind of jumped up and someone went a little low on him.
Well, as you know, our protection for our passers requires a defender to make contact with him within the strike zone. That is shoulders to knees. And on that particular play, in fact, I talked to Mike about it at practice after the game, and he indicated that he saw the guy coming at him, and he had enough time to say to himself, oh, no, not Fort McMurray, and he de-cleated himself by jumping a bit. The contact was outside of the strike zone. The referee correctly interpreted our standard, and that is if the quarterback moves the strike zone once the defender is committed, it's not a penalty. So on that particular play, it was deemed not to be roughing the passer, but quite frankly, only because of Riley's smarts and experience. He protected himself by jumping up. Football's an interesting game. We have two sets of players. We call one set the skill players, and then presumably the other guys, I'm not sure what they are, cannon fodder, or I don't know. But in any event, there are a number of players on every ball club who are critical to the success of that club. Your best receivers, your high-quality running backs, your quarterbacks, and... You know, we need to protect these guys because fans love to see exciting play. They don't want to go out there and see a 9 or 10-7 ball game. They want to see lots of points scored. So you can't allow field days on skilled players. So, you know, we're getting there. We're getting better at it. We're bringing in new rules. We will penalize players now in the CFL if a receiver... let's say a pass is gone, it's over his head, and then somebody comes in and smokes him afterwards, you're going to see a penalty for that now. The receiver is not expecting to get crunched, so he's not protecting himself for the hit. So it's essentially a free shot, and we've got to do better at that. Player safety, notwithstanding the fact that football is an extraordinarily violent sport, is number one for the CFL, and we are getting better at it every year, and we will continue to get better at it.
We're joined in studio by Bud Steen as we go inside the stripes. Well, we started south of the border. Let's go north of the border. In the Eskimos Bomber game, we saw probably the king of trick plays, Mike O'Shea, try another one. There was one play where he had, 14 guys on the field trying to pull off a trick play. So basically, take us through what exactly you saw. You weren't at the game, but you're watching on TV. What exactly you saw with that situation?
Well, as you so aptly put it, Mike O'Shea is the king of trick plays. When he was the special teams coordinator in Toronto, he won several games. He was the critical factor in several ball games that Toronto stole because of his creativity, ingenuity, his craft as a rules interpreter and a coach. And he's continued to this day, notwithstanding the fact that he's the head coach. His fingers were all over a third down punt in the second half of the Eskimo game. They had 14 guys on the field, so Edmonton would have been spending some of its energy wondering what the hell's going on. Who am I covering? There seems to be too many guys here. Individual players haven't got time to start counting who's out there. They're just trying to look for the guy that is their responsibility. As the snap count is being called, two of them sprint to the Bombers bench, leaving them with 12. As soon as the second guy is off the field, they snap the ball and kick it. You know, it seemed rather innocuous at the time. Obviously, the Eskimos didn't fall for it. But it certainly got the league's attention.
Yes.
And on Monday, they issued a memo to the ball clubs essentially saying, okay, previously, if a team had more than 12 players in its huddle or in its formation, i.e. on the field, prior to an offensive play, on first and second down, the referees were directed to flag and kill the play and apply the penalty. On third down, or on, you know, converts, that sort of thing, on special teams plays, the referee would hold the flag, not kill the play, allow the play to go, and then go to Team B, that is the defensive squad, and ask them whether or not they want the kicking team to go back 10 yards and kick again, or whether they would decline the penalty. That is now gone, and the referees have been directed that if Team A has more than 12 players on the field, the referee's going to kill the play, flag it, and it's going to be 10 yards, and they're going to be kicking 10 yards back, which, frankly, I think is a good move. You know, we should be consistent across the board. But there are guys who like to push the envelope.
Yes.
And
Mike O'Shea appears to be one of them.
Apparently, yes.
One other thing on this topic. I remember a Super Bowl when the Saints played the Colts. I believe that was 49. The Saints did an onside kick.
1949?
No, Super Bowl 49.
Oh,
I'm
thinking, my God, how would you know that?
Super Bowl 49, the Saints did an onside kick to start the second half, and I remember Saints coach Sean Payton went to the refs and said, this is what we're doing, don't blow it dead.
Right.
Have you ever had a coach come up to you and say,
yes,
hey, we're going to do this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah? That's part of the pregame meeting that occurs 40 minutes before kickoff time, when the referee and umpire meets first with the visiting head coach and then secondly with the home team head coach. And if a team has got something goofy planned, we've always said to the coaches, tell us so we don't screw it up. I remember specifically a meeting I had with Cal Murphy when he was the head coach for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, coming in and telling me they were going to be doing a certain play, and it was very well executed, except for the fact that they didn't have an eligible end.
Okay.
And that was back before they could bring in big guys and turn an ineligible number, i.e. a guy with a 50 or 60 on, into an eligible guy so that he could play end. And so we took back a 70-yard gain for Winnipeg, and probably contributed to continued poor heart health by Coach Murphy. He was rather distressed, but we didn't screw it up. Mm-hmm. They just didn't pull it off properly.
Okay, we're joined in studio by Bud Steen, Inside the Stripes, 30 years as a CFL official. We're kind of recapping week 9 before taking a look at week 10. There was a horse collar tackle in that BC-Calgary game, I believe it was Bo Levi Mitchell, that went down. It seems to me like we still don't really understand what constitutes a horse collar tackle. Someone who's called a bunch of them, what are you looking for in a horse collar?
Well, it's so interesting. Horse collar is a relatively new unnecessary roughness penalty. It was brought in about 09, I believe, as a result of a tackle on a Calgary player, a receiver who was pulled hard back, and as a result, he blew his hamstring. It just puts enormous strain on the backside of the structure of the leg if you get yanked back and down. So horse collar tackles have two aspects to them. If a player gets his hand either inside the collar of the side or back of the player's jersey, he need do nothing more. That's a penalty. Much like face mask, if you put your close your hand on your opponent's mask, it's a penalty, whether you yank it or not. So inside the jersey or inside the shoulder harness, the shoulder pad gear. Once the hand's in there, you're boiled for 15 yards. Secondly, if a player grabs the jersey of his opponent on or above the nameplate, and there is a pull back and down, that is a penalty. And on the Mitchell tackle, it's unfortunate because, well, unfortunate for British Columbia Lions fans because it was going to be about a 15-yard sack, and the BC player got a handful of nameplate. You could see the Mitchell, the L's on the Mitchell were gone. And Bo Levi certainly went down backwards. In fact, he got pulled right off of his feet and down. So it was a really good call by referee Kim Murphy. Television was critical of it at the outset, and I think it was because they hadn't seen the angle that Murphy saw. I mean, it was pretty clear when I was doing the review of the game that the hand was right on the nameplate, right on the Mitchell, and he went down. So, another good player safety rule that has been introduced in the recent past to protect some of these ball players who put themselves at risk every game.
And one other player safety rule I want to get into is a peel back block. We hear that a lot, but for those who don't know what constitutes, in similar horse collar, what constitutes a peel back block?
We found a few years ago that on some plays, the offensive players, on a play that was either slow developing or perhaps a broken play where bodies start running around in a sort of chaotic fashion, offensive players, particularly offensive linemen, were using the opportunity to catch by surprise their opponents who had been probably beating the heck out of them for the game up to that point. So if an offensive player is coming back towards his own dead ball line and delivers a block below the waist of an opponent, as long as that opponent is not, or as long as he is not being currently engaged, then that is a penalty for peel back block. It was initially introduced a few years ago for hits behind the line of scrimmage, and now it's anywhere on the field. So you could see a peel back block called on a receiver who comes back to clear away some of the defenders pursuing one of his teammates with the ball. Essentially, the defensive player isn't seeing this guy coming and doesn't have the opportunity to protect himself, decleat, or jump in the air or whatever to avoid serious knee damage. So again, it's a major foul. And again, for the audience, in the Canadian Football League, we have two types of penalties, minor fouls and major fouls. The difference being that major fouls can be applied in addition to the outcome of a play and or in addition to any other minor foul that has been called on the play. So you get a doubling up effect with these major fouls.
And we'll close on this one, bud. We got a good question at 10-12-60 from Dean. It says, can you ask about the botched roughing the passer to Mike Riley? They swam crawling over Riley, then the Eskimos got flagged for unsportsmanlike for pulling the player off of him. Did you catch that play?
I did.
Eskimos against the Bombers, and your thoughts?
Crap. There should have been two flags on that play. That should have gone in both directions.
Okay.
To just penalize a player who is coming to the defense of one of his mates who's getting bashed around to just penalize him, I think is out of balance. And based on what I'd seen up to that point in the game and based on that, specifically on that play, it would have been very helpful if one of the other officials had stuck his nose in. The contact on Riley was fine. It went on a little long, yes. Mm-hmm. But certainly what was going on went on too long, and Edmonton should not have suffered a minus 15 on that. Now, if I recall the play, there was another flag on the play, so it was a balance, and I think Edmonton only lost 5 yards on it, but there that should not have occurred. I didn't evaluate that game, okay, but I suspect that the evaluator would have done some deductions,
okay,
on that particular play.
But I appreciate you coming in these last 2 weeks. Jason's back on Tuesday. I'm sure he has a lot more questions I didn't get to. Big game tonight, Friday, Eskimos and Riders.
Oh, boy, is it ever.
It's going to be the intensity and the pressure is going to be ratcheted up to about 11.
So much fun. Hopefully the weather holds off because there's going to be 40,000 people there, a lot of them with watermelons on their head. And Eskimo fans, you got to get out there and make noise, because if you don't, your team is going to get drowned out by the noisy Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans. So get there, buy a 50-50, and have a great night.
It's going to be a good night. Bud, thanks for coming in. Jason's back on Tuesday.
My pleasure.
It's Bud Steen, former CFL official, current evaluator of officials.